Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is January 30th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast is Virus Crisis. Who cares? And I didn't mean to actually put together that play on words, but when I wrote it down, I realized what I did with that who cares moment when I'm talking about a virus, because obviously WHO is also the acronym for the World Health Organization. And they came out today, changed their tune from only a couple of days ago when they announced that the coronavirus was not a global emergency or was not a global pandemic, to today, yeah, it is. It is a global emergency. It is a global pandemic. It's no surprise to us here. You just have to weigh the facts and evidence that this coronavirus began in China in a city that contains 10 to 11 million people, that the state, that the size, okay, the size of California by population, okay, is under quarantine for all intents and purposes in China. Now we know that every single province within China has now has verified cases of the coronavirus. Tell you folks, truth is always the first casualty. We cannot believe a word that comes out of the Chinese Communist Party. Can't. We have a hard enough time taking the word of our government officials here in the United States, Democrat, Republican alike. Makes no difference what administration is. It makes no difference, so get off of it. So we have no idea what the actual truth is. And of course, any type of institution like this is not going to run through the theater screaming fire or abandon ship. It's not their job to do that. They are not going to come out and say, okay, everybody's got to worry. They, part of their job is to keep everybody calm. But I also think their job is to really lay out the facts of the case. Because also in their statement from the World Health Organization was, yeah, sure, this is a global emergency, but you can continue to travel. You can continue to travel. You can continue to trade. You can continue to do business. Of course, we cited yesterday, and there's a continuation today, of major airlines the world over restricting or outright canceling inbound and outbound flights to and from China. You also have some airliners who are being sued by their own cabin crews and pilots to ensure that they do not fly in and out of China. All right, so something's going on here because this is not the run-of-the-mill course. Despite the fact that the World Health Organization declares this a global emergency and says it's okay to do business and to trade and to travel, shortly thereafter, the United States State Department issues a warning to Americans, do not travel to China. Can they get their messaging straight here? It's a pandemic, but you can travel. No, you can't. You shouldn't do it. Well, which is it? Is it safe to travel or isn't it? Shut everything down or open everything up? Which is it? You can't have it both ways. You can't. People have to understand what's going on. And the fact that this is taking place in China just makes it that much more difficult to understand the true severity of this virus. Because it's already confirmed in about 24 other countries. And I'm sure it will spread from there. I hope it doesn't, but it most likely will. It most likely will. We have another confirmed case here in the United States from person to person in Chicago. Now, hopefully that remains quarantined and contained there to those two individuals. And hopefully they make a full recovery. But time will tell. It's just a head-scratcher, folks. And, of course, we were talking late yesterday evening during the podcast of how we were seeing market after market after market selling off 1, 2, 3%, even Taiwan, their market, their exchange was down almost 6% at the low during yesterday's trading session. And, of course, that carried over to the European markets today. The UK market was down 1.4%, so was the German market and the French market. I mean, and then, of course, this was also carrying over to the United States with our futures market trading. Down triple digits on the Dow, down big percentage drops. That's to be expected. You have this type of major sell-off the world over. You're likely going to continue seeing that here in the United States as well. Well, we did see that in the early morning hours. We did see that through most of the afternoon. But then you have these statements come out. Oh, it's okay to travel, blah, 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 blah. And you know in the United States, folks, that stocks are not allowed to go down. There can be no true price discovery. Not allowed to happen. There's going to have to be some sort of either good positive headline, or there's going to have to be some more Federal Reserve money printing to come to the rescue, or a combination thereof. Well, isn't that dandy? That's exactly what took place today. And despite being down triple digits, the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 125. Not too shabby. Gaining 0.4%. The S&P 500 also down in the red all day, but happened to close up 7 points, up 0.2%. Not too shabby considering what it went through its trading session. NASDAQ 100 also gained 34 points, up 0.4%. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, was down nearly 1%, maybe even a little steeper than that at its low for the day, but closed flat. Slightly in the red, but nothing to write home about. Relatively flat. Because stocks in the United States are not allowed to go down. Did you not get the memo? They can't do it. They can't do it, which makes it extremely dangerous for a risk-reward, risk-return profile. Stocks at all-time highs. Of course, there has been a little bit of a pullback, of course. But who cares? Who cares? A virus? And look, I hope this audience by now, especially if you've been with me, understands exponential growth. If you don't understand exponential growth, watch my capital economics presentation on central banks. Are central banks trapped? And you will see exponential growth as much as you can see it by when we analyze their balance sheets. So when you look at exponential growth or geometric growth, that is how a virus can grow. That's how it can really turn into a pandemic. You infect one person, maybe that person then infects two other people, and then those people then infect two others, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And before you know it, you have 5,000 people infected, then 10, then 20, then 40, 80, 160, 320. You see how out of control this can get very quickly if it is not contained in a proper manner, in a fast and orderly manner. So clearly this is something that can be deadly. It's something that has warranted the World Health Organization from making a formal statement coming out today announcing that this is a global emergency. So this is just not run-of-the-mill, your everyday flu. Unless, of course, this is a grand conspiracy of headlines, which I hope is not the case, and I don't believe it is. But something is amiss. Something is amiss. When you have the World Health Organization saying, yes, global emergency, but you can continue to travel. The United States, along with many other countries, issuing warnings or outright bans to their citizens not to travel to China. So something's up. Something is most definitely up. And sometimes you'll get that rare occurrence of a report out of China from some sort of medical professional. And you got to take that with a grain of salt as to whether or not it's actually true. But when they tell you, some of the articles that I've come across, they're running short on supplies. Some medical professionals are now infected as well. And once that starts to happen, now you really have a problem. Because if nobody is able to take care of the sick, you see what I'm saying? So who's going to go in there and save the day? And again, when you're talking about China, you're talking about 1.4 billion people. In all provinces, as I stated at the top of this podcast, all provinces in China have confirmed cases of coronavirus. All right? So be aware. Do the best you can. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands as much as possible. Okay? Simple stuff. But most people don't do it. So that was some of the market performance. Of course, we have today's another day. So right now we have the Japanese market getting back 1%. So a little bit of a pickup from yesterday's sell-off. Commodities have been taking a beating. But of course, on this news that we are able to travel, oil has been able to gain a little bit of that back. Nevertheless, we have Crude oil, WTI, trading at $53.20 a barrel. And Brent, the international metric, is at $59.40 a barrel. Huge, huge declines. Take a look at the graphs. Natural gas continues to get pummeled. Makes no difference, folks. This just continues to get pummeled. Now trading at $1.82 per million British thermal units, BTUs. $1.82. Completely predictable, folks. We've talked about this all the time, but it's something that is worth mentioning repeatedly because we have a mountain of debt coming due from the energy sector. A lot of this debt is junk. A lot of this debt is leveraged loans. These are some of the riskiest loans out there. The price of the commodity that these producers rely on is plummeting. It is plummeting. And the reason these companies are still in business and can continue to operate is because we live in an extremely bizarro financial world. Because we have the central banks, plural, around the world running roughshod, negative interest rates, low interest rates, quantitative easing once again, although they don't call it that anymore. Easy financial environment. So what would normally happen under a free market capitalistic system, these companies would have restructured. They would have gone bankrupt or they'd be in the process thereof. Maybe they'd survive and come out of the restructuring. Maybe they'd go bye-bye, allowing that sort of creative destruction to happen, allowing other entrepreneurs who know what they're doing to come in and absorb those employees who are no longer working, absorb those assets that are no longer under the control of that previous firm. That's how it's supposed to work. But nope, can't happen. Not here in the United States of America. Cannot happen here. Any semblance of free market capitalism in the United States of America, any semblance of price discovery, it's not allowed to happen. It's not. It can't happen. We have zombie company after zombie company in existence, staying alive because of easy money. All right? This is not good. These companies have to pay this debt back. They have to pay the banks back. They have to pay the bondholders back. They have to pay their investors. This is how it works. They also have to continue paying their employees. Well, when you have your commodity price plunging, what do you think is going to happen? You think it's going to be easier for them to pay all of these people and service their debt, or do you think it's going to become more difficult? Not a trick question. In fact, it's a very easy one. It's going to become a lot more difficult. And when you understand the mountain of debt that is coming due this year and over the next few, there's no way in hell these people are going to get out from under this. There's just no way. There's no way. The only way that they possibly could is if prices spike. Well, if prices spike, now you're going to create a whole bunch of other problems down the chain, aren't you? Now you're going to see price increases in all of your other products because now transportation costs are going to go up. Input costs for a whole host of manufacturing processes are going to go up. Those costs will be passed on to the consumer. Get the gist? It's not going to end well at all for anybody. So pay attention. Gold and silver, somewhat of a flight to safety in gold. Silver got pummeled over the last week, but has obviously gained some of that back. But nevertheless, it took quite a hit. I think down almost 3% one day. But gold is trading at $1,575 an ounce. Silver is trading at $17.83. an ounce. Dr. Copper, which I know we haven't talked about recently, over the past few months has made somewhat of a comeback, but since this virus crisis, coronavirus, it is pummeled. It is plunged as well, but we'll continue to monitor that. That could simply be headline driven, or is it something more structural? I think what is going to happen, most likely, if this virus continues, it is going to be a scapegoat for a global slowdown. Forget what the Federal Reserve and other central banks have been doing. Forget the terrible policies that have been enacted the world over, including here in the United States. Forget all of that. It matters not. We have a virus, and that's just the cause of all of our woes. It's going to be an easy excuse to make, especially if the numbers get worse. And we hope that doesn't happen. But I am imagining that it will. And I am imagining that they could really get out of hand because of where it started. The Chinese Communist Party probably does not have this under control. I do not trust their numbers. I do not trust what they say to me. And when you have one organization saying it's okay to travel, but then you have many governments, including our own here in the United States, advising, do not go to China, something's up. Something is up. So just pay attention to that. So that's some of the market performance. We have U.S. GDP coming out today at a clip of 2.1%. What they tell me is that meets expectations. I don't know how that meets expectations, but that's what they tell me, so that's what we're going to report. Going through some people that I follow here and there, people on Twitter, some macroeconomic analysts and investors are saying, well, you know, if you look deeper into the numbers, which we like to do here, it's not really 2.1%, because what happened, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the BEA, used their GDP deflator. Now, this is going to get a little bit in the weeds, but just understand the gist of this. So what's normally used, or what's more widely cited, is not the Bureau of Economic Analysis, their GDP deflator, which is about 1.5%. But what's most normally cited is the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, their CPI, or Consumer Price Index, inflation for that matter. That's what's typically cited. That's what's typically used. And had the government used the CPI as opposed to the BEA's price deflator, and I apologize for all the acronyms, then GDP for the fourth quarter of 2019 would not have been 2.1%. It would have been 0.22%. Not 2.1, 0.22%. And if you had taken my advice, or just simply listen to this podcast, but I say don't trust me, go look it up for yourself. But if you had taken my advice and went out and looked on the Federal Reserve's economic data website, and you just punched in some keywords, and you looked at the numbers, and you did a basic manipulation, a couple clicks, edit the graph, change it, year over year change, and you typed in construction, retail, manufacturing, industrial production, transports, federal, state, and local tax receipts, corporate profits, jobless claims, you would have said, Alex, there's no way. There's no way it's 2.1%. And I'd say, I know. There is no way. But when you got the government in charge of all of these funny numbers, you don't trust anybody. But 2.1% is the number. And speaking of transportation, we cite here all the time the Cass Freight Index. Well, January is about to wrap up here. We got another day. In a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks, Cass Freight Index report will be out for the month of January. And I said consistently here for the past several months, I'm going to watch this closely over the first quarter of 2020 to really make a more a stronger declaration as to whether or not we will be entering a recession this year or next or whenever. Or maybe we're turning the corner. Maybe somehow the central banks and all of their money printing in their attempt to reflate the economy might actually work. That's a possibility. I do not assign a probability or a high probability to that, but it's always a possibility. Although all that's going to do is cause a bigger bubble, which we're in the process of, and all that's going to do is create a bigger problem down the road because nobody wants to take ownership of anything. We are void of leadership. But anyway, if you're following the Cass Freight Index, they have been saying for months, and we have been reporting it here for months, that they were anticipating a negative GDP print in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter. Well, we did not get a negative GDP print in the third quarter, and now we're not getting a negative GDP print in the fourth. But if you go to the CPI number as opposed to the BEA's GDP deflator, you're at 0.22%. 0.22%, which is a hell of a lot closer to zero or a negative number, isn't it? Much more fitting with everything else that's going on. But stocks aren't allowed to go down. And if you had a print of 0.22% on top of the virus crisis, who cares? Where would we be? Not allowed to happen, folks. Not allowed to know the truth. Free market capitalism is not allowed to take root in the United States of America anymore. Price discovery is not allowed to take place. You maybe see a little bit of it in the futures market or in part of the day, but at the end of the day, there has to be a rally. Stocks cannot go down. And if they go down, some sort of fluke. Go ahead and buy. Get back in there because it's just going to keep going up. Not because there's organic growth. Not because everything is fantastic. But because there's money printing and that money has to go somewhere. And it's going into stocks. Some of you may pay attention to the markets, or at least some of the financial news, have probably come across many articles or stories on TV talking about Tesla, because that stock is going through the roof. It's going through the roof. I don't even know what it's trading at today, 600 something, maybe even close to 700 today. Astronomical. They sell, what, about 400,000 vehicles a year? Their market cap is now bigger than the entirety of the U.S. Auto companies, Ford, Fiat Chrysler, GM, which sell millions of vehicles. Tesla is bigger than all of them combined. Tesla, I believe, is only second to Toyota. They just eclipsed Volkswagen a couple days ago. It makes no sense whatsoever with these types of valuations, other than to say we're in a bubble. We are in a bubble, which again is being caused by none other than the Federal Reserve, which is being egged on and encouraged by none other than Thunder Thumbs, our President of the United States, our fearless leader, who wants negative interest rates, by the way, don't forget it. There's a huge disconnect, folks, a huge mismatch between the numbers that exist and then the numbers one would expect to happen. We have been witnessing this for a couple years now. Quite honestly, this is par for the course. This is not new under the Trump administration. I just think that the pedal is really put to the metal when it comes to all of these numbers being manipulated, with the Federal Reserve doing what they're doing, which, by the way, I know we talked about them briefly yesterday because they concluded their two-day Federal Open Market Committee meeting, but they are going to continue with the repo market at least through April. This is not news to this audience. We are not surprised by this. There were some rumors that this was going to be the case. We've been stating since at least July of last year when we did that capital economics presentation, our central banks trapped, that this was going to take place. We did not know it was going to be because of the repo market. That nobody really predicted that. There are still so many unanswered questions as to what was the root cause of that and what's actually going on in those repo markets, in those overnight lending markets. We're never going to know the truth. And if we do, it'll be years down the road. So you can put your smartest minds on it, and people all over the world, obviously, financial minds, economic minds, are trying to speculate as to what the cause is and what's going on. But that's all it is. It's all speculation. Your guess is as good as theirs. They might have a little bit better understanding of all of the mechanics of it. Your guess is as good as theirs. Your guess is as good as mine. Mine's as good as yours. That's a problem. In a country that is supposed to govern itself, that's a problem. We are supposed to know the truth. How are we supposed to make informed decisions as to who to elect to deal with what policy if we do not have the whole truth on the matter? Again, this has been par for the course for generations in this country. This is nothing new. I'm just asking the question out loud, when's this going to stop? It's not. The pedal is to the metal. $1 trillion deficits, 3 rate cuts, billions of dollars added to the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, billions printed for overnight lending purposes. And the best they can still give us is 2.1%. What do you think is going to happen when there's a recession? Because recessions have not been outlawed. They haven't. Everybody's trying their best to reflate everything, keep this thing going. It's not healthy, folks. Recessions are a healthy process. They are. I know the last one was a doozy. but it was caused by the very same actions that are being undertaken today. Except it's much worse now, because a lot of that malinvestment that existed a decade ago still exists. It's just accumulated. It's those zombie companies. So pay attention. Please pay attention. Quick update to Brexit. Many of you are aware that it's going to happen. It's going to happen. The UK will officially be out of the European Union tomorrow. Thank God. It's about time. That's all I have to say about it. I haven't been focusing much on it because of so much other stories. If you followed this podcast last year, we talked about Brexit. It's a story. We'll continue to monitor it, but I'm not going to focus on it like I did before. It's about time they upheld the voice of the British people from a vote that took place in 2016. Now to the impeachment. The Senate wrapped up their Q&A session today, if you will, a two-day Q&A session where senators were able to submit questions to the Chief Justice, who then read those questions aloud, and the House managers and or White House counsel replied. How's it looking? Well, tomorrow there is going to be most likely debate on the floor of the Senate amongst the senators as to how to proceed from there. There will be a vote as to whether or not witnesses and documents will be able to come forward and testify or to be subpoenaed and entered into the record. So that is driving a lot of the late hour news cycle as to what Republicans might cross the line and vote to hear new witnesses. Well, we do have at least one. There is Susan Collins of Maine, who has released a statement this evening stating that she will vote. She will vote to have new witnesses come forward. Most likely a John Bolton, the former national security advisor in the Trump administration. We have retiring Republican Lamar Alexander, senator from Tennessee, who also came out with a statement this evening stating that what the president did was inappropriate. It was inappropriate, and that the House managers proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt. What the president did was inappropriate, and the House managers proved their case with a mountain of evidence. But I am not going to vote for new witnesses to come forward. Pretty much in a continuation of the statement, Lamar Alexander is throwing his hands up. The president did it, but I'm not going to vote to impeach him and convict him. That's it. We got an election coming up. That's the American people. They'll decide what's going on. At least that's what we know as of right now. Senator Murkowski of Alaska is another Republican on the fence. She is delaying her decision. She states that she will make a formal statement tomorrow morning. She is reviewing her notes this evening, she says, and she will make a statement tomorrow, or release a statement tomorrow as to how she will be voting. Most likely, Senator from Utah, Mitt Romney, is likely to vote to hear new witnesses as well. So that's pretty much it, folks. It was interesting in the Q&A session, there were some senators who were questioning the argument from Alan Dershowitz, this asinine argument that an abuse of power is not an impeachable offense. The senators were asking this question because the argument is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. And Alan Dershowitz wasn't even there today. He was there yesterday. He was not there today. I think he was in Miami today. So it wasn't even him who was up there defending himself. It was other members of the White House counsel. And they had a hell of a time defending Alan Dershowitz's argument. Oh, no, you're taking it out of context. What Alan Dershowitz really meant was XYZ or XYZ or ABC, 1, 2, 3. He didn't actually mean that. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, and they all know it. They all know it. And they know what the president did was more than inappropriate. They know that it was an abuse of power. So that's the argument. And it's very likely now that the Senate will move to acquit the president. That will be the votes. Mitch McConnell probably has the votes to do so, especially if Mitch McConnell has the votes to make sure that no witnesses are called. Because if no witnesses are called, then that's it. This thing is wrapped up. There might be the opportunity for senators to meet behind closed doors to conference amongst themselves, to maybe try to convince other senators to, okay, well, we're not going to have new witnesses or new evidence or documentation, but the House managers made their case. You can still impeach him on what we already know. You can still convict him and remove him on what we know. That could take place. I doubt that it will. There's likely to be that conference, but the likelihood of the ultimate outcome is that Donald Trump will be acquitted, and he will have been acquitted on an argument primarily from Alan Dershowitz that an abuse of power is not an impeachable offense. We know the president did it. The president admits that he did it, that that's what he wanted Ukraine to do. He's on camera admitting to it. He's on the lawn, got reporters in front of him, cameras on him. Mr. President, what did you want the Ukrainians to do exactly? Well, I think they would have, if they wanted to pay attention, they'd open up an investigation. We know what he wanted. And then he continues, and China should open up an investigation too, because it might have been just as bad, if not worse, in China than it was in the Ukraine. He declares the phone call perfect. Lamar Alexander, in his statement, even though he doesn't want further witnesses, even though he's most likely going to vote to acquit, says that what the president did was inappropriate. That's not good enough, but it's something. Will other Republican senators come out and say that it was at least, in the very least, inappropriate? Probably not. I'm sure there'll be a few, but most of them probably not. Or inappropriate will be as harsh as it gets. And Donald Trump will be fine with that because Donnie will gotten away with one more thing. He felt exonerated after the Mueller investigation, even though both Bob Mueller and his own attorney general, Bill Barr, said that that report did not exonerate the president. Thunder Thumbs took to Twitter and said, "I'm exonerated." What do you think he's going to do now? If he's acquitted, based off of the defense, that he can do whatever he wants. He can abuse his power, can't be impeached for it. He can commit a crime. Justice Department's not going to indict you. When he makes the statement, Article 2 of the Constitution, I can do whatever I want. Impeachment is not just about inappropriate, illegal, abuse of power behavior. It's about preventing it from happening again. It's not just the action itself, it's about future actions. And there is enough history, there's enough precedent in the record of Donald Trump to know what he is likely going to do in the future, that should rise and raise a concern to Americans. It should. And this is coming from somebody who voted for him. You understand this? I didn't drink the Kool-Aid. All right? I mix my own stuff. I ain't drinking somebody else's crap. You understand what I'm saying here? He is going to feel vindicated. He is going to feel that when he stated Article 2 gives him the power to do whatever he wants, that he can. If the Senate acquits, and that's most likely what's going to happen. There is no remedy. You understand this? You understand what's happening here? Because one of the arguments, of course, the House managers are making this argument that I am, that this basically is going to make the executive a king or a monarch. He can do whatever he wants now. Not just this president, but future presidents, because they can point to this as their precedent as to why they can get away with it. And then you have Republicans on the other side saying, oh, well, this is going to give too much power to the Congress because now impeachment is going to be something that's simple and it's easy and it's just going to be political. No, it won't be easy. No, it won't be. Now, you have to ask yourself a question. If you're put into a corner and you have to answer it, what branch of government should have more power? The executive or the Congress? I know my answer. My answer would be the Congress. It would be the Congress. You know why? because that's the people's house. And this is a government of, by, and for the people. Not of, by, and for the president. Of, by, and for the people. It's supposed to be as decentralized as possible. Remember, federalist versus anti-federalist. A small, limited federal government or no federal government. A breaking away from a monarch. July 4th, 1776. Ring a bell? Mean anything to you if that's what the decision you have to make as to where you want it to go? Understand, Congress has given away so much of their power to the executive branch over the course of generations, it's not even funny. This is it. This is like the final death knell in all of this. See you later. Who's going to keep the president in check? The American people? How's that going to happen? Because if the president can get away with doing everything, not going to see the light of day on any information, how are the American people going to be informed as to know what and how to do anything? Who to vote for? It's a very slippery slope, folks. It's very, very dangerous. It's very dangerous. Because if you grant this type of power to the president, a president can use it. They'll use it whenever they want. Because there's no remedy. But to think on the other side that, oh, well, this is going to be now political. It's going to be easy to impeach future presidents. No, it's not. Because it's a lot easier for one person in the president to abuse his or her power as opposed to getting 435 congressmen on the same page or the majority of the 435 members of the House to vote for impeachment. They're held to account every 2 years in an election. The president has four. Senators every six. See where I'm going with this? It's much, much more difficult to turn this into a parlor game. A political trick. Something to do just because you don't like the president of the United States. It's much, much more difficult. And it's supposed to be difficult. And shame on all of the people, primarily, unfortunately, on the conservative shows, Fox News, other radio personalities and the like, saying that this impeachment process is boring and that it's a snooze fest. Shame on them. And shame on the other side if they've tried to turn this into something that's going to potentially be fantastic because you have impeached and removed a president of the United States. Shame on both of them. This is the problem with this country. This is a serious and solemn process. This does not happen that often, nor should it. But if there is somebody who is abusing his or her power, they should be held to account. Checks and balances, ring a bell, that's what this is all about. Not, it's my guy, my party, he can get away with it. It's not how it works. But that's how it's been working for a long time in this country. That's why Donald Trump is the president of this country, because people are sick and tired and they thought, well, maybe this guy could do something about it. Turns out, not so much. Pretty much new boss, same as the old boss. $1 trillion deficits, trade wars, farm bailouts, negative interest rates calling for, yada, yada, yada. Where are the fiscal conservatives on that? Nowhere to be seen. Nowhere to be seen. Where are the conservatives trying to conserve the Constitution? Nowhere to be seen. Oh yeah, abuse of power? Not an impeachable offense. Do what you want. Nowhere to be seen. I am so disappointed in the Republican Party. It's not even funny. It's not even funny. And it's a snooze fest. And it's boring. It's not supposed to be exciting. It's a solemn, serious situation. Virus crisis. Who cares? Stay diversified. Stay vigilant. Stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.